You're listening to the Marpick Niece Mysteries Podcast. Audio mysteries, fiction, interviews, recommendations, and more. Brought to you by Mademark Publishing and Wondervox, where hearing is believing. Fasten your headphones. Welcome to the next three chapters of A House in the Woods 2, The Devil's Due. Fasten your headphones each week for this episodic supernatural chiller. You can purchase the entire audiobook at various retailers or directly from me. Just visit my Payhip storefront at Mademark Publishing for a deep and deeply satisfying discount. Narration provided by Wondervox. A House in the Woods 2 picks up where A House in the Woods left off. Laurel Calloway is still in the mysterious town of Strickland, New Jersey, where nothing is as it appears to be. 2 years have gone by, and they've been good to the Calloways. Laurel and her husband Jeremy have a new house and a new family with baby Isabel about to celebrate her first birthday. Everything seems perfect until Laurel begins to have dreams. Bad dreams. Something tells her these dreams could really be memories. But of what? Of whom? And of when? Did she really run over a woman in the road at night? Had they once had a dog? Why are these things trying so hard to surface, swimming slowly up from her subconscious? The more she begins to tell the people around her about these dreams, the more convinced she is that they're part of it and that these nightmares aren't really dreams at all. Page after page, the pace escalates as Laurel begins to learn the truth and plot her escape. But will she succeed? The devil is in the details.
Chapter 10. Laurel woke up feeling clear-headed and energized for the first time in weeks. It was a stark contrast to the vague malaise she'd experienced most mornings, and it made her realize how desperately she needed to feel normal again. Among the pleasures of the morning was Jeremy's insistence on taking care of Isabel before he left for work. "You're gone by then," Laurel had said, pointing out that he was rarely still in the house by the time she poured her first cup of coffee. "Not this time," he said. "I told my boss I had some family business first thing in the morning and I'd be running late." "Getting your daughter up is family business?" The very definition. Their routine had come to consist of Laurel sliding out of bed while Jeremy was in the shower and heading to the nursery in preparation for their child's soon-to-be-evident needs. Nothing can prepare a parent for the realities of infant care, the irregular hours, the panic over any perceived abnormality in routine, the fear that something this joyful was too good to be true, and the sheer enormity of the responsibility. A baby was by definition the center of its world, and by extension, the center of theirs. It was a huge relief, as well as a surprise, to wake up rested and discover that Jeremy had taken care of everything. He'd even made breakfast. Laurel stood in the kitchen rubbing her eyes, as if to rid them of sleep and what surely must be a hallucination. Jeremy was waiting at the table, with Isabel in her high chair. "Good morning," he said. "I hope you're hungry." "Once I get over the shock, I will be," she replied, smiling. Jeremy glanced at the table, then at Isabel. "Oh, you mean, are you okay?" "Of course, I'm just rethinking things." "Uh-oh," thought Laurel. "Is this his declaration of independence, freeing himself from the demands of a corporate job to try acting again?" Seeing the look on her face, he clarified, "I don't mean I'm rethinking my job, just my approach to it. You and Isabel are the center of my life, not Philly Star Properties." Laurel walked to the table and sat down. There was a plate of scrambled eggs waiting for her, with toast and just fried bacon. A glass of freshly squeezed orange juice finished it off. "What are you considering?" she asked. "Less time in the office," he replied. "More time with my family." "Do you think they'll go for it?" "It's not for them to say yes or no," he said. "Trust me, they'll be flexible. They need me, they want me. They'll give me what I'm asking for." "And what is that?" said Laurel, reaching with a knife for the butter dish. "More of this," said Jeremy, waving his hand to indicate the three of them. He reached over and gently stroked Isabel's hair. Laurel nodded. She hoped he was right. She hoped this was a new beginning of sorts, and the end of her irrational apprehension. At least, that's what she had considered it. Apprehensive about being a mother. Apprehensive about her ability to keep writing. Apprehensive about their life in Strickland. Perhaps this morning, with its restful beginning and its surprise indulgence, was a turning point. Laurel continued thinking something fundamental had changed when she finished the first draft of her novel later that morning. She'd been close to the end, but she'd gotten stuck. She would set a timer for 45 minutes, her long-standing method for staying focused, then force herself to write until it went off. It had worked for her for the past several years, but lately it had failed to perform its magic. Some recent mornings she had simply stared at the page on her computer screen and written nothing, waiting for the alarm to go off. But today, in a burst of creativity and certainty about the story, she had finished it. And then she had called her agent in New York. Dottie Berenger had gone from being a senior agent at Chelsea Literary, LLC, to being its owner. She'd bought the company from its founder, Louise Harriman, and trimmed its stable of authors to something she could manage with just herself and two young protégés. With a staff of three and a small stable of successful writers, it became even more of a boutique agency than it was when Dottie had taken a chance on a first-time author named Laurel Calloway. 3 years later, Laurel was no longer an unknown. The rights to her first book had paid handsomely. Her second book had ignited a bidding war. And now, on the best morning she'd had in what seemed like forever, she was ready to send her third book off to Dottie. "I didn't think I could finish it," Laurel said. She'd been talking with Dottie on the phone while she made a late lunch for herself in the kitchen. "Why would you ever think that?" Dottie said. "You're unstoppable, Laurel. A baby has a way of putting the brakes on things. Well, I hope you have a good sitter, or maybe Jeremy can step up." "What are you talking about, Dottie?" "A book tour, of course," replied the agent. "Once this new novel is out, you'll have to do some traveling." "I don't know about that." "It goes with the territory," said Dottie. "Authors need readers. They need press. They need exposure. You're good, sweetheart, but you're not J.D. Salinger." "What's that supposed to mean?" "He was a recluse. That's not an option anymore." Laurel sighed. "Let's discuss this some other time. You haven't even read it yet. So send it to me. I'll have Christopher print it out, and I'll start reading it tonight. I cannot wait." "Take your time," Laurel said, as she heard a knock at the front door. "I know you'll have edits." "I'm an editor as well as an agent. It's my job." "Listen, there's someone at the door," Laurel said. She knew who it was. She could see Eileen through the window. "We'll talk later. And remember, there's no hurry. I need a rest." "Don't we all?" "You're the best," Laurel said, and she hung up. She put the sandwich she'd made on a paper plate and set it on the table. As she went to greet Eileen, she wondered if the old woman would be up to looking after Isabel a few times when the inevitable book tour had to be endured. If there was one person she could count on, it was Eileen. Chapter 11. Eileen had become noticeably frailer the last few months. She was already old enough to be considered elderly, but it seemed to Laurel that she was suddenly aging more quickly. Eileen and her husband Pete had lived in the area all their lives and had become good friends to Laurel and Jeremy after they'd bought their first house. Laurel had been meaning to drive over there again and say hello to the couple they'd sold to, but like many things she had on her to-do list, it never seemed to get done. Laurel opened the door to a smiling Eileen, who held 24 eggs in used cartons in one hand and a small bag in the other. Laurel knew contained her delicious homemade tea blend. The eggs were from Eileen's chickens, who could be seen clucking and pecking around in the yard until they were herded to the safety of a coop at night. Laurel missed seeing them when she drove down the road. It was amazing how such a short distance became much longer when they'd moved close to town. "How are you?" Laurel said, holding the door open. "Tip-top," Eileen replied. It was her standard response. If she were to be believed, she'd been born tip-top and would die that way after spending every day of her life in tip-top shape. Laurel looked at her, judging her to be losing the battle against time. It was inevitable, she thought, when you get into your 80s. I brought you some eggs, Eileen said, as she entered the house. She headed straight to the kitchen, with Laurel following behind. And some tea, I see, Laurel said. She liked alternating coffee with tea, switching from Luther's caffeinated rocket fuel in the morning to the soothing blend of herbs and spices Eileen put together. I guessed you'd be low on both right about now, said Eileen. She put the eggs on the counter. She had told Laurel when she first brought eggs over they did not need to be refrigerated. Americans were the only ones who did that because their eggs were pasteurized. Nature, Eileen said, provided its own protection. You must have me on a timer, Laurel said, only half joking. Eileen had a knack for knowing when they were running low on eggs or tea. I've been drinking it for years, dear, Eileen said. I'm a good judge of how long it lasts. Well, it's my favorite. I can't really drink any other brand now. It's all so bland. I'm glad you feel that way. Do you mind if I sit a few minutes? I'm a little weary. Laurel motioned for her to take a seat at the table. Don't tell me you walked here. Are you mad? It's 6 miles. No, I didn't walk. Pete dropped me off. He's off to Luther's for some jerky and jawing. That's what Eileen called it when Pete went to the general store to hang out with the other old men. I told him to swing back this way in a half hour. I hope you don't mind. Not at all, said Laurel. Are you all right, Eileen? Tell me the truth. You look tired. Old, that's what I look. Trust me, when you hit 80, it's like falling off a cliff. Things that were already wearing out just give way. I'm sorry. Eileen looked up at her. Nothing to be sorry about. Now where's that baby? Laurel knew Eileen was crazy about Isabel. She'd insisted on being one of the first people outside the family to see the child when Laurel and Jeremy brought her home. Their mothers were already there, a combination made bearable only by Jeremy's mother staying at a hotel in Flemington while Laurel's mother slept in the guest room. The two women were forever connected by family, but not by any mutual fondness. They managed to tolerate each other for the sake of their children, and then their grandchild. They'd stayed for a week after Isabel was home. Then Laurel had finally convinced them to leave. She'd even told them Eileen was there to help if she needed it, a role Eileen had played enthusiastically ever since. I'll make some tea while you fetch the darling, Eileen said, pulling herself slowly up from the chair. Laurel nodded and left the kitchen, walking down to the nursery. She'd considered it a lucky day when Isabel had been quiet this long. It was as if the child knew she had a book to finish and had given her the peace and silence she needed. A moment later, Laurel was back in the kitchen with Isabel. Eileen had filled the tea kettle and set it on the stove, turning the flame up high. There she is, Eileen squealed. The sight of Isabel made her seem 10 years younger. Laurel knew the Grangers had not had children, and Isabel had given them a chance at vicarious grandparenting. At least it had for Eileen. Pete was not so enamored of babies, or of anyone, except the old crows he hung out with at Luther's. Laurel handed Isabel to Eileen, who took her in her arms and immediately started bouncing her up and down. Isabel shrieked with delight. She'd become attached to the old woman whose presence was well known in the house. Laurel had not even had to find another babysitter, which suited her just fine. Are you about to have a birthday? Eileen asked Isabel. The child was old enough to have uttered a few words, but birthday was new to her. She stared at Eileen, furrowing her little baby brow as she pondered what had been said. She is, isn't she? Eileen asked Laurel, knowing Isabel was not going to answer her. 2 weeks from now, yes, said Laurel. Then we must have a party. The tea kettle began to whistle. Laurel walked over to the stove and turned it off. She noticed Eileen had already placed a tea ball in a single cup. Aren't you having any? Laurel asked. It was a rhetorical question. Eileen never drank her own tea when she came over. She'd said it only put her bladder on high alert, and she didn't like excusing herself every 10 minutes to use the bathroom. She had assured Laurel she drank plenty of it at home, where she could rush off to her own restroom at a moment's notice. I've had 2 cups already, Eileen said. You know I prefer to enjoy my beverages at home with Pete. It wasn't something Laurel ever felt like pushing back on. She loved the tea and its exotic blend of flavors. It didn't matter to her if Eileen joined her or not, and she never had to pay for the tea or the eggs. "Now," said Eileen, sitting back down and holding Isabel in her lap, "about that party." "I wasn't really planning anything," Laurel said. She brought her cup over and sat next to Eileen. "I thought a quiet night with Jeremy and the baby would be nice. But it's her very first birthday. There will never be another one, Laurel." "Every birthday is one of a kind, don't you think?" replied Laurel. Laurel began to feel uneasy. One of the reasons she hadn't planned a celebration for Isabel's first birthday was because of the guest list she'd have to come up with. Old people from Strickland, one or two people from the farmer's market, her uncles Martin and Frank. But no other babies, no other mothers. She had not made the acquaintance of any other women with children. "Because there aren't any, Laurel," she thought. That wasn't exactly true. She knew the couple who'd bought their first house, Michael and Susan Dietz, had a son not much older than Isabel. "But this is big," replied Eileen. "The beginning of a long, long journey, if I'm any example." "Let's hope so." Laurel took a sip of her tea and smiled. It had that effect on her. "I've just been so busy, Eileen." "Then let me take care of it." "That wouldn't be fair." "No objections," Eileen said. "We'll have a big to-do. I'll invite everyone. Uncle Martin and Frank." "Of course." "And the Dietzes," Laurel added. "At least Isabel will have one person her own age." Eileen hesitated, still bouncing Isabel in her arms. After a moment, she looked at Laurel, her expression flat. "They've moved away." Laurel was surprised. She hadn't gotten to know them, but she'd been meaning to visit, especially since Susan Dietz gave birth just a month or so before Laurel. "You've had a year," Laurel thought, chastising herself. "You never properly welcomed them, and now you can't." She was equally surprised Eileen hadn't said anything to her. No one had. "Why didn't you mention it?" Eileen blushed, embarrassed. "It just didn't occur to me. With my health and Pete's heart." Laurel sat up. "What's wrong with Pete's heart?" "Oh my gosh, Eileen, what's happening?" "He's even older than I am, child. Time is not on our side. He'll be good for a few more years if Dr. Bride is to be believed. He's got us going to a cardiologist in Flemington. It's not something for you to worry about, and neither is the baby's birthday party. Aunt Eileen will take care of it all." Laurel had been glad Eileen chose to refer to herself as an aunt and not a grandmother. It saved her any tension with the real ones. "If you must," said Laurel, "but I'll have to clean the house. We haven't had a party here yet, or even anyone for dinner except Uncle Martin and Frank." "Oh, that's not your worry," said Eileen. "We'll have it at Luther's." Laurel tilted her head and looked at Eileen. "A general store? For a baby's birthday party?" "It's perfect, when you think about it. There's plenty of room. Those shelves of his slide pretty easy. We've had parties there before. We'll just open up the space, hang balloons and streamers everywhere. I'll bake the best birthday cake you've ever tasted, and we'll give this little girl the celebration she deserves. Won't we, sweetie?" Eileen gave Isabel a kiss on the cheek, to which the baby responded with laughter. "Now finish your tea," Eileen said. "Pete will be back soon, and don't you mention what I told you about his heart condition." "Not a word." "Good. He's self-conscious and a little frightened, to tell you the truth. Mortality comes calling eventually, and no one wants to answer that door." "Speaking of doors," Laurel said, not sure how to bring it up. "Yes, what about them?" "There's a door in Luther's store I never paid any attention to before. I thought it was a storage closet or something." "Most likely it is." "No, it's not. He told me it led down to the basement." "And this surprises you?" "Every house here has a basement, and the store's just a big house. He lives upstairs, you know." "I know, but I heard something." Eileen stopped fidgeting with Isabel and looked at her. "Let's hope it's not mice, in a general store. Imagine if that got around." "It wasn't mice, Eileen. It was people. I don't understand," Neither do I. But when I asked Luther about it, he treated me like I was crazy, and then it stopped. Laurel considered bringing up the fact that Eileen had told Luther about her spells. But the timing and circumstances didn't seem right. She'd just been informed Pete had a serious heart problem and might only be around for a few more years. She would discuss it with her another opportunity. "It's like whoever was down there heard me," Laurel said. "Why would anyone be in Luther's basement?" Eileen asked, managing to give Laurel an "Are you sure you're okay?" expression. "I have no idea." "Then take his word for it. I'm telling you, it was mice. I'll find a way to gently suggest he have an exterminator in there again. I swear he doesn't believe in them. He used to have a cat, but that was years ago. Maybe he needs another one. I'd like one myself again. But given our ages, the poor thing would outlive us. Pete wouldn't allow that. He's got a fondness for animals he's never had for people." "What happened to the cat from the house?" Laurel asked. She'd seen it inside when she looked through the back window the first time they'd stopped there to check out the house in the woods. It was what told her someone was still living there, that someone had been Eileen, taking care of the property for the elderly couple who'd put it up for sale and moved away. "Old Willie? He's back there, on about his eighth life by now," replied Eileen. "We took him in when you and Jeremy bought the place, but he made his way back when you left. I think that house really belongs to him. Pete said that's the last pet for us. He cried when Willie went home, but don't tell him I told you that." As if on cue, Laurel heard a car pull into the driveway. A moment later, there was a honk. Pete had never come inside their home and wasn't about to start now. Eileen carefully handed Isabel to Laurel. "I'll see myself out. You finish your tea." The baby stretched out her arms, reaching for Eileen. Her face scrunched up. "Don't cry," Eileen said, leaning down for another quick kiss. "Aunt Eileen never goes far." It was true, Laurel knew. In many ways, Eileen had been the anchor to their new life here. She was always available and as reliable as anyone Laurel had ever known. "What happened with the house?" Laurel asked just as Eileen was leaving. Turning back, Eileen replied, "Oh, it sold lickety-split. To another young couple, can you imagine? You and Jeremy put some kind of blessing on that house, let me tell you."
"And what about the Dietzes?"
"What about them?" Pete honked again. "Where did they go?" Eileen shrugged. "I have no idea, dear. You'd have to ask them." "And you have no way of doing that," thought Laurel. "You never went over. You never made their acquaintance. Don't make the same mistake twice." She made a mental note to visit the house and meet the new owners very soon.
"I'll keep you posted on the party," Eileen said, before giving Laurel and Isabel a last quick wave and heading out to the car.
Laurel sat at the kitchen table, gently bouncing Isabel in one arm while she finished her tea. A birthday party for a one-year-old at a general store with a group of people old enough to be the child's great-grandparents. What could be more festive?
"She means well," Laurel said, knowing Isabel had no idea what she was talking about. "We'll have fun, baby girl. You don't know the difference between 8 and 80, so why should I dwell on it? We'll have a very good time, I promise."
Isabel began to fuss. It was feeding time, and that's all that mattered in the universe. Chapter 12. Curiosity killed the cat, Laurel thought as she dressed the baby for a trip in the car, but satisfaction brought her back. It had been her father's rejoinder to people he considered overly cautious, the ones who wanted to dampen your curiosity. And Laurel was very interested in the couple who'd bought their house and then, according to Eileen, disappeared without saying much about their departure. Perhaps they hadn't made any friends in Strickland, a possibility that caused her to feel guilty. She should have visited them, she thought. She should have invited them into her and Jeremy's life so they would at least know someone under the age of 60. But she hadn't, and the more she dwelled on it, the more she became confused about the whole episode. She and Jeremy obviously sold the house. They must have met the couple. Why don't you remember this, Laurel? They had to have done the closing. Surely they showed the house to the Dietzes.
Her inability to remember all those things in any detail troubled her. Putting her shoes on at the kitchen table with Isabel in her stroller, Laurel suddenly shuddered. Is this early onset dementia? She wondered. Is this part of what's going on with her? The anxiety and the dread? Even the dreams? She had not considered anything so terrifying, and she refused to believe it now. But something had fogged her memory. Pregnancy hormones? The exhaustion of writing a third novel? Everything is fine, she said to Isabel, who waved her tiny hands in the air. She had permitted Laurel a morning's respite from her perpetual baby needs, and Laurel hoped it would last another hour or two. She wanted to see the house in the woods, the one they'd lived in for a year after leaving New York, the one they'd sold, with Laurel having so little memory of doing it. Let's go, she said, getting up and pushing the stroller to the front door. She carefully lifted it over the single step they had, and a few moments later, she fastened Isabel snugly into her carrier in the back seat. If anyone's home, we can be a nice surprise. If not, we tried. Isabel found the words amusing for reasons only a baby can know, and she laughed as Laurel got in the driver's seat and started the car. It's been a long time, she said, to herself more than to Isabel. I wonder if it looks the same. She pulled out of the driveway and headed to her first home in Strickland, the one she and Jeremy had called their dream house. Remembering her nightmares and her apprehension, she wondered if it still was.
You've been listening to the Mark McNeice Mysteries podcast, where murder's on the menu and the screams are on the house. Brought to you by Mademark Publishing and Wondervox.